Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. As we get ready to start our conversation, I'll remind you the last hour was a Urbanite radio story from Urbanite magazine, I'll remind you that we are partially sponsored by Urbanite magazine. Urbanite's healthy food film series, part of the 2012 Urbanite Project, begins this weekend, this Saturday, April 28th. What's on Your Plate is being screened at the Y of Central Maryland on 33rd Street at 1 p.m. here in Baltimore. The movie follows two 11-year-olds as they try to find out where their food comes from. The second movie, Urban Roots, covers the growing urban farming movement in Detroit. That'll be screened at 2640 Space on Friday, May 4th at 6 p.m. And you can go to urbaniteproject.com for more information. We are going to take a look now at the what's facing the Supreme Court. They're going to be debating. They are looking at the issue of SP 1070, which is the Senate bill from Arizona, which created an immigration law, they say, to bolster the American immigration law. People are opposing it, saying that it's unconstitutional. Some of you say it has to do with racial profiling, though that wasn't part of this case. We'll talk about that as well. What this bill would do, is it requires state and local law enforcement to verify the citizen status of anyone stopped, detained, or arrested if they think there's reasonable suspicion, in quotes, that the person is in the United States unlawfully. It authorizes law enforcement officials to make an arrest without a warrant when an officer has probable cause to believe that the person to be arrested has committed any public offense that makes the person removable from the United States, and makes it a state crime to be in the United States unlawfully and require non-citizens to carry documents to prove they are legally in this country. And it makes it a state crime for a person who is not lawfully in the country to work or seek work. Federal law puts the burden on employers to verify the legality of that work now. So this is immigration, as we know, is one of the thorniest issues facing America. It raises a lot of emotional and political issues different people's realities. So we are and what happened to the Supreme Court today, it looks like Supreme Court may, we'll see, we don't know what they're going to do. But from the questioning, many people think that three or four of those provisions will be found legal. We'll talk about all that means with our two guests and you at 410-319-8888. Joining us are Michael Cutler, who's a former INS agent, senior fellow with the California Population Stabilization CAPS, and senior immigration editor magazine. This is making sense on my sheet. What's the name of the magazine?
It's And Magazine.
And Magazine.
Yes. Okay. And my website on And Magazine is called talkborder.com, and it also includes a video program that I will be posting once a week on that website.
And Ajmal Qureshi is with us, a law professor at Howard University and the former director of the Immigrants' Rights Project at the ACLU of Maryland. And Ajmal, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Steiner.
So let's get down to what's going on in the Supreme Court and why this case is there and why we both of you think it's so important from a different perspective. We'll start with Ajmal and go to Michael.
Well, I can begin by just talking about the law generally. As you pointed out, there are four different provisions to the law. There's Section 2B, there's Section 3, there's Section 5, and there's Section 6. And what myself and the ACLU and a lot of law professors and advocates from around the country are worried about is, as you mentioned, Section 2B, which requires, and that's an important word there, requires that, you know, any time an officer in the state of Arizona has, quote-unquote, reasonable suspicion that a person is undocumented, they're required to follow up and check that individual's immigration status. And what the ACLU and a number of other advocates have been saying all along is that there's really no way to determine just by looking at someone, you know, whether or not they're documented or undocumented. So this amorphous reasonable suspicion, which is the lowest standard in all of sort of constitutional and criminal law, where is that reasonable suspicion going to come from? It's inevitably going to fall back onto racial profiling. It's going to fall back onto concerns about people who look different or talk different or have different last names. Those are going to be the type of people that officers end up having this quote-unquote reasonable suspicion about. And I should point out that the concerns that I'm pointing out today, and I can talk more about this later, are not just the concerns of the ACLU or different law professors. They're the concerns of the police officers themselves who will have to enforce this law. You know, I'll point out just as sort of a sampling that Clarence Dubnyk, who is the police chief in Tucson, a different police chief in Birmingham, Alabama, which has a similar law, and the police chief of Salt Lake City in Utah, which also has a similar law, have all voiced these concerns that these types of laws, which, you know, require police officers to, you know, look into somebody's immigration status because of some amorphous reasonable suspicion, are really an invitation to racial profiling.
Michael Cutler.
Yes. By the way, you should know that I provided a declaration for the law firm that was retained by Governor Jan Brewer in defense of her state, herself, and SB 1070. And let's start out talking about the fact that the immigration laws have nothing to do with race or religion. I enforced those laws for 30 years. I started as an immigration inspector, did that job for 4 years, and then I went on to become a special agent. I spent half my career with the Drug Task Force, and I've arrested terrorists as well as drug dealers.
Okay.
The immigration laws, at their basic foundation, are intended to do two things: protect American lives and protect American jobs. What happened in Arizona did not happen in a vacuum. They were averaging in Phoenix, Arizona, the state capital, a home invasion and or a kidnapping once a day, primarily at the hands of the Mexican drug cartels. Folks who came across the border were trafficking in humans, trafficking in narcotics, committing horrific crimes of violence. When a police officer stops somebody, and understand that under the Arizona law, they would have to make the stop about something else, not just walking down the block. You know, we heard President Obama say, well, you know, if you go for, you know, ice cream with your kid, you're going to be challenged. That's not the case. But if you get pulled over as a motorist, you're unable to produce an identity document. You don't have a driver's license. You cannot prove that it's your vehicle or that you should be operating it. Certainly now the challenge is, who is this person? You know, when police make arrests, one of the first things that they do is to fingerprint the person to try to determine the person's identity and whether or not they're wanted for other crimes, whether or not they pose a threat to the safety and well-being of the officer or the community. Immigration status is a critically important component of the proper identification of an individual stopped by police. And one of the things I used to do with prosecutors I worked with, whether they were federal prosecutors or state prosecutors, was to actually be part of the bail presentation. Because an illegal alien who uses multiple false identities cannot prove ties to the community or even verify the address where they claim they live presents an extreme risk of flight. It's pointless to give a motorist a summons if at the end of the day you have no idea if the name on the summons or the address on the summons really relates to the person you've stopped. So to my thinking, given the concerns we have not only about terrorists operating in our country, but members of transnational gangs, Janet Napolitano, the head of Homeland Security, says that hundreds of American cities is now infested by the Mexican cartels. So what you really want to do is adequately identify people if there's a valid reason for a law enforcement officer to become involved with that person in the first place.
Ajmal?
I mean, I guess I understand the concerns that Mr. Cutler is raising, and certainly, you know, no one's going to disagree that, you know, keeping our communities safe are important interests. I would point out a couple of things really quickly in response. You know, first, to the extent that we're worried about sort of keeping communities safer, you know, we have criminal laws on the books, you know, for murder, rape, burglary, home invasion that can be enforced anyway, regardless of immigration status one way or the other. Those laws will always be on the books and can always be enforced, regardless of what happens, you know, with SB 1070. The question is really, you know, in the interest of doing those things, do we want to submit, you know, lawfully present people, United States citizens, to the potential of racial profiling? And I guess that's the point that I would point out right away. And these aren't just false concerns that people are raising. There are real stories of people who've been racially profiled. You know, I'll use one person as an example from Arizona. So I'll use the story of Julio Mora and Julian Mora, a father and son who were pulled over on their way to work, both lawful permanent residents, both United States citizens, people who've been here for 30 years.
Michael, let him finish his thought.
I don't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Thank you. You know, and they were pulled over, you know, when they tried to prove that they were lawfully present in the United States. They were not given an opportunity to. They were held by police officials for a number of hours, and then eventually they sued the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, and they received a $200,000 settlement. And there are stories like this from all over the country. And so we have real people who are being racially profiled, who are being the victims of racial profiling. So certainly, you know, to the extent that we want, you know, to protect our communities, those are legitimate points, and the question just is at what cost? And the only other point that I would point out in relation to that is that when crime does happen in immigrant communities, the police want to be able to work with all people who live in those communities, whether or not they're documented or undocumented. But, you know, if a person believes that, you know, as soon as I go and talk to a police official that there's the potential that I may be turned over to ICE, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, that's going to decrease the chances that they actually want to work with the police department. And that's, you know, also something that we have to take into consideration when we're talking about keeping our communities safe.
Okay.
Now, Michael, go ahead.
Sure. First of all, you said citizen, then you said resident alien. There's a world of difference, and here's the reason why. There is already a law on the books, and I don't want to get heavily into the law, but for those of you that want to jot down two sections of law, I would urge you to do so. Please go to my website, by the way, michaelcutler.net. I write extensively about it. Go to capsweb.org. Certainly check out talkborder.com. But if you look at Title 8, United States Code, Section 212, that lists the categories of excludable aliens, reasons why aliens should be barred from entering the United States. It starts with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who suffer mental illness and are prone to violence and sex offenders, convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, and so forth. Second of all, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1304E, demands that any alien in our country over the age of 18 and older, must carry proof of alien registration, such as a green card. This is exactly what the Arizona law requires. This does not create any new encumbrances, but only reaffirms the federal statute.
So the question I have then is why one of the reasons is
I just want to make one other point, if I could. I don't want this to escape from us, because this is a very important point, and I hear this all the time, that if the local police enforce immigration laws, it will hurt community policing. First of all, you quoted chiefs of police. Chiefs of police are more politician than police officer. They answer directly to the mayor of towns, and when mayors disagree because of political reasons, we have a problem. So I don't really consider a chief of police necessarily law enforcement. But more importantly, when I was part of the drug task force, I rode very often along with New York City or New York State or other local police as well as other federal agents. I want you to know one of my requirements was to help cultivate informants. Because under the law, an alien who's here illegally but provides evidence in a major criminal case can be given lawful status in our country, can even bring family members here. Victims of crimes, by the way, can also seek visas if it can be shown that they were injured and they are potential witnesses. So in reality, by going to the police, an illegal alien can quickly justify and rectify his status in the United States. That is one of the most juicy carrots you can dangle in front of an illegal alien. And if people really were concerned that this would harm community policing, why on earth would I have been able to literally cultivate hundreds of informants and cooperators when I was an agent?
Ajma, you want to respond? And I have a question here.
I'll just respond to one important point. So Mr. Cutler has moved on to Section 3 of the bill, which has to do with the requirement that everybody within the United States sort of carry some sort of proof.
Every alien.
Correct. Carry some sort of form that they're lawfully within the United States. And I'll make one point regarding that. I'll make two. First, there's no single, identification card that everyone carries. So, I mean, unless you have training from the federal government in sort of distinguishing what's a lawful stamp or a lawful card, laminated or unlaminated, whatever, you're not going to be able to accurately distinguish, what's a legitimate form of identification and what's not.
If they
not.
Call the law enforcement Second, support center, they can verify
We cannot talk over one another.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
I didn't want to let that point go, but okay.
That's all right.
The second point I'll make in that regard is that there are a large number of people who, are essentially, in the United States immigration files, they're marked as deportable, but they have files that are sort of being marked for processing. That is, they have legitimate claims to be lawfully within the United States. So who are we talking about? We're talking about people, who are from Syria right now and have been granted or will be granted temporary protected status as soon as their materials are filed. We have people who have legitimate claims for asylum or refugee status. We have people who are brothers and sisters of lawful residents who are just waiting for their visas to be processed. I mean, in some cases, when we're talking about brothers and sisters of, people who are here lawfully, we're talking about a 4 to 5 year wait just because of the delay in terms of time of getting those visa applications processed and the number of those visas that are granted every year. There are going to be a large number of people who, you know, if their applications were processed sufficiently, or as Mr. Cutler pointed out, people who are here for U visas, victims of domestic violence, who are just waiting for their applications to be processed.
But while they're waiting, they're given a receipt. They're given paperwork.
And I'm going to jump in here because I want to come back to what we came to talk about, which was what this law means and why, whether it should be overturned by the court in at Supreme Court or not, which was the focus of what we part of what we want to talk about here. And let me go to the phones and get a call in here that I'm going to come back to just really focusing on what this Supreme Court decision will mean. 410-319-8888. Jeff in New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jeff.
Yes, I'm calling from New Jersey, and I understood Mr. Cutler to say that the immigration laws don't deal with race and religion. I believe that to be unequivocally false. I'm from New Jersey. Our state senator, Frank Lautenberg, since 1990, every year, tacks on to the omnibus spending bill special legislation. It's called the Lautenberg Amendment. It was up in December again of last year, and it grants special status to certain groups, Jews from the former Soviet Union and religious victims from Iraq and places like that, and it gives them a separate status. They are, I've read where they are presumed to be legal. The words illegal aliens flow off people's tongues so easily, but they are extended the presumption of legality, and they are treated entirely differently in the whole process. I have often wondered why progressives doing immigration work don't hold up this double standard to either point out the contradiction or to argue, well, if it's good for one group, why isn't it good for all? And the argument that Jews from the former Soviet Union are so severely persecuted as opposed to all these other immigrant groups really needs careful scrutiny, because it's not true, and you should look at all the groups who support this actively and keep it quiet. But it's the Lautenberg Amendment. It gets re-upped every year,
Jeff, finish your thought.
We on the left should be paying more attention to it because it's a clear double standard in immigration policy.
All right, and a very quick response from both of you because I'm moving on to something else. Michael.
It's good to see anti-Semitism is alive and well. Look, it's done for anybody who's part of a persecuted group. The point that I made, which the caller apparently had problems understanding, is that no one is discriminated against by race, religion, or ethnicity.
But let me ask this question, though, just in that vein, when it comes to this law from Arizona that is being debated now in front of the Supreme Court, and even though the Obama administration in battling this in the Supreme Court did not raise this issue, I'd like you both to speak to this, and very quickly, Michael, you can do it quickly and then go to Ajmal.
Let
me just finish the issue of racial profiling. I don't see how, while there's no, obviously you don't mention, race is not mentioned inside the law.
Right.
But a white American, 50 years old, driving down with his kids, is not going to be questioned about where they come from. The only people questioned are people who are brown-skinned, Mexican-Americans, or as people on my show just not long ago, friends I was here not long ago, who are from the Navajo Reservation. One guy telling the story about how he was handcuffed, pulled over, brought into jail, held there for 48 hours because he wouldn't believe that he was a Navajo Indian instead of an illegal Mexican.
Can I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. I spent years where I did not arrest a single Spanish-speaking person. I spent years where I worked on Asian organized crime with the FBI. I've arrested more illegal Israelis in New York than probably any agent in the history of the New York field office, because in 1976 I stumbled upon a terrorist.
Okay, that's not what I'm asking about.
Let me finish my point. I've listened to you. Now it's my turn.
Yeah, okay.
I just want to make this quick. So the point was that aliens come in every flavor. I've arrested illegal aliens from Italy, from England, from Canada. It's not about race or religion. I will go back to that again. And when we're dealing with someone who is unable to produce identity documents, who cannot speak the language or speaks with an accent and has no identity documents, no way of proving who they are, it raises reasonable suspicion. That's what those words mean. If you stop somebody who has a heavy Spanish accent and his last name is Rodriguez and he pulls out his driver's license, the presumption is he's here lawfully. When you can't prove who you are and you can't speak the language and you're driving a vehicle without a license, there's something going on and it needs to be verified. Every country on the planet does it. And, you know, we hear all this talk about how the word alien is terrible. The word alien simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. Every other country uses a comparable term. Mexico uses the term extranjero. I'd love to know where the insult is. It's about clarity. And the laws are very clear.
So, Ajmal.
In response to the caller and the original point that Mr. Cutler made regarding immigration law and whether or not immigration law speaks to race, I mean, certainly, I'm not going to, you know, harp over the fact, you know, of whether or not, you know, SB 1070 says anything explicitly about race one way or the other. The point is that, you know, as lawyers, as advocates, as people who are concerned, as policymakers who are concerned about the well-being of everyone, we have to not only look at, you know, what the law says, but we also have to look at the practical impact of what laws are. You know, for a long time, we've had, you know, a drug war going on in this country. And, you know, Dean Schmoke, who's the dean here at this law school, has spoken extensively about the practical impact that the war on drugs has had on the African-American community. And so when you're talking about laws and the impact they have, you don't talk about just, you know, what they literally say, but you talk about the real-life impact that they actually have on people on a day-to-day basis. And I think, you know, the story that I told about the Moras, or, you know, I could talk about Jim Shee. He's, you know, a military veteran, United States citizen, resident of Arizona, who's been pulled over twice just because, you know, he has, so people can ask him about his immigration status. He's of Chinese and Hispanic descent. I mean, that's the real-life impact we're talking about when we're talking about these laws. And so in response to the caller and the general topic, I would just say that, you know, when we're talking about laws, you know, it's not just about what it says on paper, but the real-life policy impact that it has on different minority and racial and ethnic groups.
So let me ask you both this question again, Michael Cutler and Ajmal Qureshi. Then we'll go back to the phones, and Tommy, you're the next caller up here, 410-319-8888. Is it, what is for you, for our listeners to understand, the significance of this Senate Bill 1070 from Arizona on immigration, their own immigration law, in front of the Supreme Court? What's the significance, whether it passed, whether it's overturned or not? And let's get to that. That's a point I think that most people don't really understand. Michael, and then Ajmal.
Okay. I'm glad to be able to answer this question because it's critical. You know, the federal government has failed abysmally to secure our nation's borders and enforce our immigration laws. That's why we probably have between 20 or 30 million illegal aliens. I know the numbers are usually advertised as lower. I don't accept those lower numbers. And we know that we have a massive problem with the drug cartels and so forth. By enforcing these laws, I believe it will help to convince states around the country that they can pick up the slack. You know, there are many state laws that parallel federal laws, whether it's about bank robbery or kidnapping, drugs, firearms. It's not unusual to have state laws that parallel federal laws. There's plenty of precedents. And I think that this would send a clear message to illegal aliens that coming across the border does not guarantee them a free ride. Right now, you've got a president and members of Congress who talk about providing illegal aliens who can't prove who they are with a pathway to citizenship, even though their very entry into our country creates a threat to national security and community safety. We admit over 1.1 million lawful immigrants into the United States every year. That's more than the rest of the world combined. So there's certainly a pathway that people can legally follow. The system needs to be honored and needs to have integrity. It lacks the integrity. I think that by having the states being able to step up to the plate to back up the federal government that will not do the job that is vital, maybe we can help to cut down on the massive influx of illegal aliens and discourage more people from coming here, hiding in plain sight, and creating a threat to the safety and well-being of our citizens and our country.
Ajmal?
There's certainly a lot there. It's a broad question of what's the significance of the bill. I would say that there's really two important points that I would want to get across. You know, the first one has to do with sort of what sort of country we want to live in. You know, I think that all of us, no matter which side of the aisle we fall on, agree that, you know, there are problems within our immigration system. But the question is, do we want to live in a police state where, all people are required, including U.S. citizens, to carry things like birth certificates and passports all the time? Are we going to allow discriminatory laws on our books that will require law enforcement to profile us or potentially subject us to profiling all the time? So the question really is, how far do we want to go in sort of fixing certain problems, and what the best route to fix these problems is? Is the best route to sort of enact laws that open the door to racial profiling, or is the best route to sort of push the federal government to make the necessary changes that it needs to make? And that's my first point. And my second point really is, there's a reason, getting to the actual legal issues in the case, there's a reason that the Constitution delegates certain authorities and certain responsibilities to the federal government, because it would be a nightmare if all 50 states had 50 different requirements for who was a U.S. citizen, such that, when businesses or individuals went across state lines, they would have to check, am I a citizen in this state? Am I a citizen in that state?
That wouldn't happen. Can
I work in that state? I mean, Arizona is taking the first step, down that road.
No,
but we've seen
not.
Is that the states that have come after Arizona, whether it's Alabama, Indiana, South Carolina, or Utah or Georgia, are trying to one-up Arizona and go even further.
So,
the question is, do we really want to open the door to sort of, living in a police state where we can be asked for our papers at any time and where we have to check, whether or not we can be a lawful citizen or a lawful permanent resident
Jeff, we only have a few minutes left. I want to get the caller in here and throw a question.
I just have to say one thing.
Michael, you have to wait a minute. I'm going to get to the phones now. 410-319-8888. And Tommy, you're on the air. Mike, you'll come right back. Tommy, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just had actually 2 points. One, I think it's easy to feel sympathy for the handful of people who get pulled over, who have the documentation, but for whatever reason, they've been held and, against their will or whatever. But I think if you live in a place like Arizona, and if there were home invasions once a day or people getting kidnapped or whatever, you would welcome that type of situation where all they're asking is, if we pull you over, you have to have documentation. And I cannot, for the life of me, understand what's so wrong with that. If I get pulled over and I don't have my license with me, I get a ticket. So I can't understand why, no matter who you look like, if you get pulled over, if you get stopped, you should have some type of documentation. And if why is it that I have to carry it, and you tell me an illegal alien doesn't have to carry it, or an alien period doesn't have to carry it, it should be the same, just like for me, as it is for them.
All right, Tommy, I appreciate the call. I'm glad you're part of this program. And I want to come back to our guests. Well, let me just read this one thing here before we have to go to take a break here and go to our next series of guests coming into the studio. When we look at the cases happening right now, the Washington Post reported today, this is a quote, the court seems skeptical of the Obama administration's claim that a requirement that police check the immigration status of those arrested or detained was an impermissible intrusion on Congress's power to set immigration policy and the executive branch's ability to implement it.
I want to say one thing before you go to the break. That was the point I was trying to make. The Arizona law doesn't set policy. It's still up to immigration to make the ultimate determination.
And I must conclude with, and let you both finish very quickly, is that Justice Sonia Sotomayor said that the arguments that the solicitor Verrilli for the federal government were making were not going very well, she said. Was not going over very well with the justices. And so we'll see how this comes out in June. But very quick closing thoughts, Michael Cutler and then Ajmal Qureshi. Very quick closing thoughts.
Okay. Yeah. You want me to go first? I'll do it real quick.
Go ahead, Michael.
The point is that my opponent here was making this whole point about profiling. It's interesting the Obama administration didn't even raise the issue of profiling. This isn't about profiling. It's simply about identifying people that you apprehend or that you stop because of other reasons, whether it's motor vehicle or an arrest or whatever. If you don't know the person's identity, you're not doing your job as a law enforcement officer. And that's a part of who you are, whether you're here legally, illegally, were you deported previously, are you a fugitive from another country because you just killed a bunch of folks, are you a terrorist? These are questions law enforcement has to grapple with routinely. And by the way, final point, every state is a border state. It's not just the four states along the Mexican border. We have 5 million illegals that came through ports of entry, whether it's an airport or a seaport. So this is a problem for the whole country. I'm glad that this case is before the Supreme Court, and I'm glad that, according to Justice Sotomayor, it seems to be going the right way, frankly.
Ajmal Qureshi.
I guess the final point that I'll make in response to a couple of points that have been made by Mr. Cutler and the point that was made by the caller is that, you know, the reality is that the standard for being stopped, reasonable suspicion, and then, you know, it's especially weak form of reasonable suspicion when it's a traffic stop. People can be stopped for a traffic stop for virtually anything. You know, you could be stopped for traveling, you know, 2 miles an hour over the speed limit or sort of rolling through a stop sign or anything like that. You know, if a police officer really wants to find a way to stop you, you know, they can just trail you for a while and they'll find something. And what we've seen is that when local police get involved in the enforcement of federal immigration law, it changes who they stop. And so it's not just an issue of proving, you know, identity once you're stopped, but it changes who gets stopped and how often they get stopped. And that's the story, some of the stories that I've been trying to tell today about Julio Mora or Sineo Gonzalez or Jim Shee. These are people who were stopped, you know, after their states enacted laws on a more heavy basis just because they look different.
Gentlemen, I appreciate this. We will come back to this issue. We look at immigration a lot on this program. We'll do some more of it. Clearly, we'll see what happens in June when this decision comes down. We'll talk maybe more in the next week about it as well. I want to thank our guest, Michael Cutler. All the information on his website and everything else will be on our website. You can see what he's saying. And Ajmal.
Water.com and michaelcutler.net and capsweb.org. There they are.
And Ajmal Qureshi, a law professor at Howard University. Good to have you with us
as
well.
Mr. Steiner. Thank you, Mr. Cutler.
Take care, y'all. Thank you both so much.
It's a pleasure to join you.
Thank you both so much for being with us. We're going to take a brief break and bring the conversation back to Baltimore. Once again, the people from Intersection on the show, their co-executive director, and Brianna Rogers, a senior at one of our high schools here in Baltimore, is with us as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.